Alrighty, welcome in on a Friday afternoon to Baldwin in the Berg, show number five. Already show number five, moving pretty quickly in this school year as we're approaching the middle of October. I am Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Golvash.
And we appreciate you coming in and listening. And we start as always with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And as we start with the Steelers, another struggling week against the Baltimore Ravens. Not so more of the offense not performing up to par, but basically just another disappointing finish at the end. Steelers losing on a Tucker field goal in overtime, 26-23, the final score, with Mason Rudolph being knocked out, literally knocked out of the game by Earl Thomas, with Devlin Hodges having to come in and replace him. So with Rudolph in concussion protocol, he has come back to practice in a limited form, which is great to see after the just colossal hit that he took. So it's good to see that. It's good to see the Steelers' offense get a little bit of rhythm and momentum with Devlin Hodges. They're going to need it, especially if he's not going to be able to play this week coming up against the Chargers on Sunday Night Football.
Going back to this game and that hit, the one thing I want to look at is why did Earl Thomas not get any sort of repercussions after that hit? No fines, no penalties, nothing from the league.
I mean, I understand that, like, it clearly, like, wasn't intentional. Like, he texted Rudolph after the game to say that, like, he was sorry and, like, that's just how football is. But, again, how he did not manage to get a penalty or anything of that sort on that play is kind of ridiculous to me.
But if the league is trying to limit big hits, especially on quarterbacks, then it's something that they need to take care of.
That's the one hit you have to take care of. They need to make sure that he gets a fine.
They need to clean that up. And, I mean, Rudolph already had pressure from his backside, and then Earl Thomas comes in with the headshot sort of to the chin area, but still knocks him out.
It doesn't matter how hard you get hit. It's where and, like, when you get hit.
He got sandwiched, and he got hit completely in the jaw.
He took it straight to the jaw, and he was down after that.
Yeah, not...
Juju was crying. He thought he was dead. He genuinely thought Earl Thomas killed him.
You got to realize what a lot of these Steelers players have went through, especially with Ryan Shazier, seeing what had happened to him. And now, look at him. I mean, right after that, he wasn't able to walk at all. So, I mean, people were thinking,
and like that,
same thing with Rudolph, maybe potentially life-changing injury.
It's been a struggle for the Steelers emotionally throughout this whole entire season, with Ben being hurt. Now Mason Rudolph, Darryl Drake dying over and during training camp. It's been a test for the Steelers, and now it's only week six.
And also, things have also been escalating at practice as well. We saw that, you know, there were some little altercations going on between the defense and offense, and here and there stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's just ripping apart the Steelers.
Fight broke out. Marcus Allen was one of the guys that initially started it, practice squad player. There's so much frustration on this Steelers team being 1-4, not having a quarterback that's ever started an NFL game, potentially starting on Sunday Night Football on the road against a pretty good team that is searching for wins themselves.
And is regaining Melvin Gordon and slowly working him back into the offense, which will make them only better.
Right. Chargers, just a team that has also been struggling. Can't really find a rhythm with themselves, that is looking for a big win on a primetime game, just like the Steelers are. So when you look at it, the Steeler defense is really what you got to look at and say they have to be the key to win any game, especially a game on the road on Sunday night. I know I'm being repetitive with that, but if you're not going to put up many points, like the Steelers,
you better be able to stop somebody.
Especially like the Steelers are accustomed to doing on Sunday Night Football. You got to have the defense step up. You got to have the defense play well. And it starts with the back end, but it also starts with the front seven. Devin Bush got to play good. Can't have costly penalties. Need to get constant pressure on the quarterback. Watt, Bud Dupree,
Cam Hayward, all those guys.
Because you're not, Stephon too, it's been incredible this season. Because you're not going to be able to score many points
with Devlin Hodges. I mean, you'll get some points on the board, no doubt. I mean, but like you're going to need like maybe you're going to have to stop like maybe two touchdowns, a couple field goals in order for us to win these games.
Yeah, there's more than likely going to be a good bit of field goals kicked by the Steelers. They're going to have to try to dial up the offense in a different way, sort of like Cincinnati with the Wildcat, but obviously I don't think it's going to work. I said last week, don't run the Wildcat against Baltimore. And it's not going to work. And you know what
we
happens?
Did? We ran the Wildcat.
Jalen Samuels threw a pick off the Wildcat. And now, looking at the running game, Jalen Samuels is now out a month. He had his knee scoped. So it all falls on James Conner now.
Mr. Pro Bowl himself.
Oh, that's going to be a bit rough. I mean, still, the Steelers have not found any rhythm running whatsoever.
I mean,
Conner only had 55 yards last week.
Maybe we can get some Benny Snell football action. Maybe we'll actually see him hit the field, right? Benny Snell, practice player. Maybe he'll be a game player now.
He'll be a game changer.
He better be a game changer. So Rudolph remains in concussion protocol. Samuels is out a month. James Washington is out for the game. It just proves to be a struggle for the Steelers. Anywhere that they need help, it's not there. They're not finding it.
We have happened to get hurt in the most important positions, basically on the offensive side of the ball. We lost a solid number two receiver in Washington, and then we lost our starter in Ben early in the year, and then we lose our secondary starter in Mason Rudolph, who started showing some promise in that Ravens game. I thought he was playing pretty well, and then we lost a change of pace back in Jalen Samuels, who I think is a pretty good compliment to James Conner and what he does. It's just highly unfortunate this season.
I think if Mason Rudolph stays in that game, if he doesn't
they win that game. They were out playing the Ravens.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson, the Steelers defense neutralized him. They shut him down. They didn't really let him do too much. He threw for one touchdown, three interceptions. I mean, the Steelers defense was everywhere against him. A lot of pressure coming in against him. Vince Williams had a sack. Bud Dupree, T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward, Javon Hargrave all had sacks. They were really, you know, getting at Lamar Jackson and not letting him make his plays that he typically did earlier in the year. But, I mean, he made plays when he was playing the Dolphins, which the Dolphins aren't much of a team. And I like the Steelers' defense. They keep improving. They keep making plays, which has let them at least stay in the game for now. But with the offense, you're not going to win games with how they're playing. But we saw an incredible first career interception by Devin Bush in that game.
Making up for an offsides penalty on 4th and 6 that the Ravens eventually were able to convert on it. There became a 4th and 1. But, yeah, Bush made an incredible interception. Next play to make up for it. So it was good to see.
This defense just continues to make plays when the offense isn't providing much hope. The defense is sticking around, at least giving the Steelers a chance to win the games. Because if the defense wasn't playing at least to where they are now, I don't know how close these games would be.
The defense at times when they need to stand up and make a play, they just don't.
That's just classic Steelers.
They haven't
in the past couple years. It's been a trend almost, as if like we just can't make the big stops, the fourth down drives at the end of the game, like the San Francisco game. I mean, the 49ers just drove down and they ended up scoring a touchdown and ended up winning the game. But no, we played good that whole game.
They are a good middle of the game defense, but when it comes to the fourth quarter,
when you need that final stop, they're not going to be able to give it to you.
More than likely, they're just not going to. But against a San Diego offense, yes, I said San Diego, even though they are the LA Chargers, who has also, put up points at times, but also struggled.
I mean, they lost to Denver last week.
But yeah, if you lose to Denver, it's kind of shows your cards, even though it is a divisional game. But the Chargers are favored by 7 at home in the soccer stadium, which could be a Steelers home game, basically.
Yeah, it could be a Steelers.
With so many Steelers fans there. So as we look at the injury report, as we do every week, Jalen Samuels, as I said, officially out. Roosevelt Nix, again with his knee injury, did not practice. He's more than likely out as well. James Washington has the shoulder injury, did not practice. Mark Barron has a hamstring injury. He also did not practice. Marquise Pouncey had the Veterans Day off. He was full. Justin Lane had an illness. He was full. He probably won't even be active for the game anyway. Vance McDonald with the lingering shoulder issue. He played in the game against Baltimore, but he did not practice on Thursday. Mason Rudolph, with that concussion, is limited. And I think, as Tomlin said, that if Rudolph does play, it'll be the backup to Hodges. And he'll only go in if the situation really presents itself. Steven Nelson has a groin injury. He was limited. Anthony Ciccolo, with his nagging foot injury, was full. Mike Hilton also has a foot injury. He was limited. So that's the injury report. Lots and lots of names on it, and the list continues to grow.
Do we have the most players in the IR in the NFL? Because, like, I feel like we do. Because, like, I don't hear about other teams getting, like, this many injuries as we do.
Well, it doesn't have to pertain to IRs in that case.
I mean, like, I just the injury report in general. Like, a lot of players end up coming up on our injury reports.
Yeah, we get – well, that's just natural in the NFL with the bumps and bruises that you're just going to report on the injury report. Now, on IR, we really don't have many guys other than Sean Davis on IR that are worth notice, that are worth noting, other than Ben, who's out for the rest of the season. Sean Davis is really the only guy that would come back from IR to be a contributor to the team. But, yeah, the injury report is pretty full, but that's just the natural bumps and bruises of playing the game. Not that much to look out for. You would just hope that you would get Rudolph back in some capacity. But if he doesn't play, okay. You also okay. give him next week to have the bye week to be able to heal and rest up for a solid 2 weeks.
So my question for you guys, what's your predictions on Duck Hodges and his performance? What do you expect out of him? Does he lead this team at all to any sort of offensive production in this game versus the Chargers?
I think Duck has a solid day. I think he throws for 243, two touchdowns, but also two picks.
Ooh.
I think he plays okay. I think he's got guys that can make plays around him. I think everybody can double. I think they're gonna double Juju, but
that leaves Deontay Johnson. Do you think are they gonna play Moncrief, or who's the other receiver if Washington's out?
Washington probably out. It has to be Moncrief. Maybe Ryan Switzer goes in on offense.
Oh dear God!
What is the point?
What's he gonna do? Is he gonna go take a knee?
That is another thing. What is the point of having Ryan Switzer on this team if you're going to put him back there to alternate kick returns with Johnny Holton, who is another guy? Why are you having him on this team? Who's basically another Darius Hayward Bay that plays special teams. I don't understand the point in having Ryan Switzer on this team right now. He was Ben's guy. Okay, Ben loved Ryan Switzer, playing with him in the slot. Ben's not playing. Okay,
and he's not even in the slot. What's his longest kick return this year? Like maybe 10 yards.
Ryan Switzer is not playing on offense. Now I don't know if it's familiarity with the quarterback. I don't know if it's the kind of scheme and the kind of routes that Feetner wants to run with Rudolph, now Hodges. But Ryan Switzer's not played on offense. He just has not seen any touches.
I don't think he's got a snap on offense.
If you're going to do that, bring Eli Rogers in, who can be a better slot receiver than Ryan Switzer can at this point, at least in what the Steelers are trying to do.
And just let Johnny Holden take the kicks and punts back.
Yeah, so that was one takeaway that I had. And my next takeaway that both of you don't know that I was going to mention this, but here's my little mini rant that I got going on.
Oh, God.
So watching that game against Baltimore and seeing Mason Rudolph take that hit by Earl Thomas, seeing the helmet basically screwed off of him, the whole face mask and everything, I said to myself, Mason Rudolph's the guy. I did not believe it for a while, but after seeing him take that hit, get up, the reception from everybody in the stadium, fans, coaches, teammates, the toughness that Mason Rudolph showed right there, I am comfortable with Mason Rudolph being the guy.
I think through his sort of lapses and down, his like his
it's
not
just,
so good.
It's just the things of being a rookie QB.
It's like his not so good play so far. Yeah, it's all about being a rookie QB. I think there's a lot of development still yet to go, and he'll still be behind Ben for at least next year. But I do think
I like him.
I think he'll be a guy that could be around here for a while. I think he's growing on Steelers fans. I think that's going to be tough, though, seeing your savior and Ben Roethlisberger leave an organization.
I mean,
it's
like that. I mean, do you think it was easy for the Colts letting go Peyton Manning and all those guys to draft Andrew Luck? It's not an easy thing to do. But, again, people have to eventually get over it, and they'll eventually have to like Mason Rudolph, which – like Austin said, has already started to happen. The switch is already starting to happen. People are starting to cheer from. They like the kid. They like the tenacity shows. They like how he plays the game.
You could see, again, you mentioned Juju earlier about how he reacted. I think he's a good leader probably in the locker room. Just by the way, you know, that the teammates were around him and wanted to support him and saw, you know, how much it hurt someone like Juju Smith-Schuster, who probably has a good relationship with him now, you know, him being the starting quarterback and Juju being your number one, even when Juju could pull an Antonio Brown and freak out when he's not getting the targets
getting the
receptions
but
that
he's
he should
not.
Be.
He had like a pretty like solid day at the field. I mean, 7 receptions, 75 yards, and a touchdown.
He, He finally got back in the touchdown column.
He finally got back in the touchdown column. Actually, kind of speak. Why does Juju just – he loves long touchdowns. He just – you can't find him in the red zone. But, like, you throw him, like, a 20-yard pass, he'll go run it back for 80 yards. It just blows my mind how he's able to just get these long touchdowns. And then, like, he's just in the red zone. Like, it's more like Vance McDonald and, like, all those guys. It's kind of crazy to me. Or do you think that's just because they double him?
It might be because they double him, especially in the red zone. But coming into the game versus the Chargers, he's going to be – have to get open for Devlin Hodges. But Devlin Hodges, he could play well.
From what I saw, he didn't look, like, bad. Like, he looks like – for a third-string quarterback?
He didn't look horrible.
He looked like one of, like – he looked, like, serviceable. He could have been, like, he could be a backup for
him. He could sling it at Samford. Yeah, he was one of the best in the game.
He broke the FCS all-time passing record there. And he was a three-year starter at Samford. The guy can play, but I don't know, at the NFL level. We'll see for a full game.
That's what Sunday night has in store for us.
That's why you got to put talent around him, see what that talent can do, and whatever you got to do, you got to support your young quarterback. And, you know, I hate the word, but you're going to have to – have him be a game manager the whole entire game. There's just not much other way to explain it.
Now, the one thing is, let's see if the Steelers let Hodges sling it down the field. If not,
I mean, if they didn't with Mason, well, if they didn't with Rudolph, what makes you think they're going to do it with Hodges?
Well, with Hodges, what do you have to lose? Because he's coming into this game, there's no ceiling. Like, what expectations do you have
for this kid? Slinging the ball is probably his best aspect.
Well, the thing that I noticed, which I thought was very compelling, when Hodges went in, he threw the ball deep two out of his first three passes. Two of his first three throws were way down the field, and Mason Rudolph has had two such throws all season long, okay? It doesn't make sense to me as to why they were so willing to let Devlin Hodges sling it. Like we're going out there playing backyard at the Turkey Bowl already, okay?
Yeah, it's going to be – get ready for that Turkey Bowl, by the way.
It's just – it was just compelling to me. We're going to let Devlin Hodges, the undrafted – third string, who was the camp arm quarterback, throw the ball down the field, but we won't let Mason Rudolph, who supposedly is our next guy. Okay, but, you know, I would love to see Hodges throw the ball down the field. I think he can. I think he can be a good quarterback for the Steeler team if managed correctly and if the play calling works to perfection, which is a lot to ask, but I think can be done for a week or two if has to be. So if the Steelers can survive, remember the last time Steelers played in San Diego /LA, whatever you want to call it. Le'Veon Bell walk-off touchdown, Monday Night Football.
Touchdown.
Michael Vick as the quarterback.
Michael Vick, that drive, whenever, because he wasn't a Steeler. Everyone hated Mike Vick whenever he came in here. But he still, I liked Mike Vick coming here. I mean, it was a change of pace. I mean, he didn't really fit the scheme, but he was still exciting.
Yeah, it's been done.
Devin Hodges has a lot of things about him that people are starting to like.
It's been done before. Can the Steelers do it again?
I mean, honestly, the Steelers could have. They could have won that football game if Juju doesn't fumble.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that takes us to
– that.
Okay, so I was looking at a couple things on Twitter. Everybody is just – you know, there's two sides.
They're bashing Juju.
There's one side that is bashing Juju, and there is another side that is saying, okay, he has fumbled twice in his career. But look at the likes of Santonio Holmes, who has fumbled in their first 3 years. Santonio Holmes, double-digit fumbles. Lynn Swan had like 8. 5 for Antonio Brown. Do you realize
that they're part of the two biggest points in the season where he fumbled?
It doesn't matter, okay, how many – I don't really care how many fumbles you have. It's when you fumble, okay? One costly game in New Orleans last year where Juju fumbles, where the Steelers –
it basically took us out of the playoffs.
We're going down the drive, which we were number one in the AFC North. We fell out of the top spot in the division. Look at the game against Baltimore. We're driving down the field. Could go down there and win the game on a field goal. Juju fumbles. Just like that.
It's, I mean, I thought it was a pretty nice play by Marlon Humphrey.
Okay, I don't care how many fumbles you have in the first quarter or the second quarter that count on the stat line. It's when you fumble. If you're fumbling with 10 minutes to go or 5 minutes to go or whenever it is late in the fourth quarter in an overtime, That's inexcusable. That's a different story.
It really is a thing for the Steelers, for like these new age Steelers. Like James Conner, he fumbled in the San Francisco game. We ended up losing that one.
Yep.
And then he did it last year against Jacksonville. And Ben had to make that miraculous play to just win the game for us. Like, it seems like it just starts to happen like all the time now with our new age guys. They're just not holding on to the ball as well as they should be.
I feel like we honestly could go on for about an hour talking about Juju and just all that's sort of going on with him in different aspects. The one person I love looking at on Twitter that discusses a lot about Juju Smith-Schuster is Mark Madden. Oh, he loves to rip on – not necessarily rip on him, but,
yeah, he
you know, brings up some good points. He's always – Mark Madden always posts about how Juju, what he does in the community and all his partying he does. He was up at IUP, like, 3 or 4 days ago partying on a countertop, and it was posted on an IUP bar stool. Like, this guy's living life, but is it going too much where he's out partying, you know, a day or two before a big-time game? And then he goes and fumbles in big-time situations. Do they have any links to each other? Maybe. Should he be in the lab working, you know, on holding onto the ball, you know, running routes maybe with Devlin Hodges getting together?
I don't want to say it, but, like, if A.B. fumbles that football, he works on that repeatedly. Like, no matter what people said about A.B., he had the most unbelievable work ethic. He wanted to be the best. So if A.B. fumbles in that situation, he probably worked on holding the ball the next – 3 or 4 days, nonstop. That's all he works on.
Yeah, so I agree with what you guys are saying, but I also want to bring the point up that Juju is a guy that broadcasts his whole life on social media. Now, he's not AB in terms of a lot of negativity and a lot of criticism towards others. Juju is a bunch of positivity. He loves to show others what he's doing. He's a guy that loves to be interactive with fans and others, and he basically just displays what he does through social media. And a lot of guys do the same thing or similar things.
It's the new age athlete to do that.
Yeah, it's what Juju does to broadcast it to everyone that we see it. We don't see it from other athletes because they're just not as up to social media and putting it and sharing everything as Juju is. And that's just his comfort level with everybody in the city, just the type of person he is. And just with his followers. It's just his comfort level. And a lot of people don't have the same thing, but with him being able to broadcast it, it just makes a amp for criticism, and it shows that, you know, this is what Juju's doing. It just brings to the table something to criticize.
The only thing is, we see a lot of, you know, partying and going out and do social activities for Juju, but how often, besides, you know, team practices, is he working? Like you mentioned, Andrew, Antonio Brown was always working. Off-season, had crazy workouts. This and that. Juju, during the offseason, having a water balloon fight with the community. A good thing, you know, to bring the community together, you know, up his status a little bit.
But how much time is he really going in the lab?
He's getting paid to be a football player, not, you know, a social endorser or whatever you may want to call what he does off the field. But how much work is he actually putting in, you know, to be one of the best players and be a number one receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, one thing that my dad said that I thought was interesting that is, I think, also true. Look at guys like, you don't see Peyton Manning did not do commercials when he was still in the league. He did a couple when he was in Denver at the very end of his career. Tom Brady's not doing commercials. Peyton's doing them now because he's out of the league. Brady will probably do them once he is out of the league. But you look at guys like Juju, third year. Baker Mayfield and his progressive commercials.
That's what I was going to say. And all those commercials Baker's in, look what's happening to him out there.
Well, it's not just the commercials. These guys are not proven. They have not proved anything. And they're already on commercials trying to promote themselves before they get good.
It's all the new age athletes and new age advertising. We have an advertising class that talks about how things are changing.
Some people just want to secure the bag first and worry about their football skills later.
That's what everybody looks at. They look at getting money first. That's the new age athlete. That's what it's developed into. That's what the NBA has shown. That's what the NFL has shown.
Well, I think they've tried to balance it, and I think the balancing just has not really been there.
For heaven's sakes, NCAA players are going to start getting paid.
Yeah, and that's a whole other topic we can go 20 minutes on.
That's a whole other. We can build another show. Just talk directly off that.
It's the new age athlete. Everything's changing. Money's changing everything in every league. Because even in the NHL, we're looking at players like Mitch Marner that are securing over $10 million.
Garrett Carlson, $11 million, 11 years. Like, there might be a. Do you call a lockout in the NHL soon? I think there's a chance in
a lot of leagues. So.
Like Jeff Hayes is asking for like $7 million a year. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, cap numbers going up in every sport, and the money just, as we know, it
keeps flowing.
Continues to flow and continues to rise as just global media continues to be on the rise as well. So speaking of college, we will move on to college football, our segment after the Steelers every week. After college football, we'll talk about my fact of the day. We'll give our I'm sorry segment, our Penguins report, our predictions, and as always, our shout outs. And we'll throw a little baseball in there in between. So, Nate, take us away with our college football talk.
So, our college football segment of the day, start off, Pitt football's on bye this week, coming off a 33-30 victory over Duke. A little bit of an interesting game, if people paid attention to that on the ACC network. Pitt was up 26-3 going into the second half. Duke scored a ton of unanswered points in the second half, but that was all led by Pitt mistakes. Pitt was just shooting themselves in the foot. I would say they played an amazing game overall, except for the turnovers and penalties. They played pretty well, but you weren't going to stop a Duke team that runs that option out of Quinn Harris. But Duke ended up scoring. Then Pitt, miraculously, 82-yard drive to end the game.
To Pitt.
Right over to Pickett.
Vilek Carter, the little spin move, ran it right back into the end zone.
I mean, again, it shows the character of this team that they're not going to, you know, go down. They let up 31 unanswered to UCF, a top 15 team. They come back, or they score to end the game on the Pitt special. Just this team's showing a lot of fight.
They just don't seem to get rattled. Do you think, again, I think I asked this last time, do you think that's just Narduzzi, or do you think it's just a testament to his players?
I think a little bit of both, but I was at Permane's watching the game, and I left. It was 26-3, and I was like, we can leave. Yeah. We can leave. Pitt's got this one in bag, right?
Then you look on your phone, and you're like, wait a minute. Duke's winning?
I did. I looked at my phone, and I was like, I was with two of my friends. I was like, hey, guys, the game is tied now. Duke just got a two-point conversion, and now the game is tied. But
it's what Pitt does best. They just somehow shoot themselves in the foot. There's at least one part in every game that Pitt football plays that they just have a complete and utter breakdown and collapse where they let a team score. There's turnovers. There's penalties. The only game that Pitt might have had maybe one, maybe two penalties was Penn State. And look, they only lost by 7. When they eliminate penalties and play smart,
they're a great football team.
They're a team to beat. And the ACC,
Paris Ford had one heck of a game. 12 total tackles with 2 picks. That's
even before he got ejected, because he got a targeting call.
So those numbers could have even been higher. He definitely could have.
And also muffed a punt that led right to a Duke touchdown. Because again,
what is Narduzzi thinking there? Like, what? Just have French in there. Have him even just wave a fair catch. Just make sure he catches the ball.
A muff punt by Paris Ford. Drop by Butler Jenkins, by Butler Jenkins,
and then two picks from Pickett. I mean, one was absolutely terrible. I mean, he threw that was like triple coverage.
Yeah, he threw it right into coverage. But looking ahead for Pitt, they're on bye this week, but they play Syracuse on a Friday night next week. The rest of the teams they play, there's only one team that's ahead of them in the standing, and that's North Carolina. The rest of the teams they play are inferior to them. They really should basically run the table.
But in Pitt fashion, will they lose one of those games?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, they'll probably lose to UNC because they haven't beaten them since they joined the ACC. Moving over to Penn State. Penn State this week takes on a top 20 matchup, 10 Penn State, 17 Iowa. This game is at Penn State, I do believe. This one is going to be interesting. Penn State, though, has shown that they're just so utterly dominant against every team they play. They're 5-0.
The game's at Iowa.
Okay, yes, the game's at Iowa. My bad. But the
7:30 game on ABC primetime.
The last time Penn State played at Iowa, they had an unbelievable game-winning drive down the field that won them the game. And what seemed like Iowa was going to run away with that game, but Penn State ended up coming back. Penn State played Purdue last week. They won 35-7. Sean Clifford, another big game for him, 20-for-29 in the passing category, 3 touchdowns. He also rushed for a touchdown. But they also saw Noah Kane run for 105 yards, 1 touchdown.
9 yards a carry.
They're finally maybe finding a running back, and he's a freshman too. So maybe they're finally finding a running back that,
and
you know, will take
– he so happens to be young.
Maybe they're finding a running back that's going to take a majority of the snaps and carries for the Nittany Lions up there. I mean, but they have, again, so many different backs that they can use, Ricky Slade and Devin Ford, just different guys up there. Iowa, I don't know how much Iowa's going to be able to do against.
They're coming off a tough loss against Michigan on the road, 10-3 last week.
Their defense seems solid. I mean,
they're really going to have to rely on this game, Nate Stanley, to come up big for the Hawkeyes. He
beat Ohio State.
1,200 passing yards so far, 8 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He's proven that he can win games, like you mentioned,
over Ohio State.
He's been around for a few years. He's going to have to be their top guy. They have 3 running backs that carry the ball for them, McKee Sargent, Torin Young, and Tyler Goodson, all over 200 yards for Iowa. It's going to be an interesting game, but Penn State, honestly, when you think they're going to have a tough game,
They make it look effortless.
Yeah, they're blowing out teams like Maryland, 59-0. Purdue's not that good of a team. 35-7, though, a lesser score than I would have imagined versus Purdue. I would think the scores would be opposite between Purdue and Maryland, but that's just how the cookie crumbled, and Penn State took Purdue 35-7 and Penn State. But defensively, Penn State continues to show that they're one of the top defenses in the league.
They had 10 total sacks, I'm pretty sure.
In college football, yes. 3 by Shakah Tony and 2 by Uter Gross Matos. But Penn State, once again, I think has one of the best upfront defenses. Their D-line's tough. Their linebacker's always one of the best in the nation, led by Micah Parsons up there. So Penn State going into Iowa, I think home field advantage will play a big factor for the Hawkeyes, but Penn State, just with how they've been playing.
If Penn State's able to silence this crowd quickly enough, I think it's going to be
just
an easy victory.
Just with how they've been playing, I don't think there's really, a chance for Iowa. Maybe there is. We'll see. They played Michigan kind of tough, but ended up losing that game, so we'll just see how that one goes. And then the last college football team we want to talk about, West Virginia University Mountaineers to the south of us. They last week took on number 11 Texas Longhorns and lost 42-31 in Morgantown. Kind of expected. Texas is a good team. Sam Ellinger went 18 for 33, 211 passing yards, 2 touchdowns.
The W didn't go down quietly. I mean, they lost by 11. I mean, it looked like a close game until the fourth quarter. I mean, then the Longhorns put up 21 on them.
Yep, the Horns were not down, West Virginia fans.
Yeah, West Virginia's. Liam. Thought they had that one, but for the Mountaineers, their running game has just been non-existent. Kennedy McCoy, their top rusher, he only rushed for 30 yards on 6 carries. I think they're looking
6 carries.
I think they're looking for
they split they,
answer.
They
I mean, that's
four,
five
four, four running, three running backs, including and then Austin Kendall. They all had 6 or 5 carries. They really shared the back with 3 different running backs.
They're looking for Kennedy McCoy to take majority of the snaps and carries, but I don't think he's just been. I don't think he showed the capabilities that he needs to show for them to rely on him throughout the game. But next game, West Virginia takes on Iowa State. That is in Morgantown. I mean, West Virginia needs to have a big bounce back game, because then after that they go and play number 6 Oklahoma. So it's a big game, I think, for West Virginia in their season. Very, very pivotal matchup. If West Virginia can take that, they move to 4-2 when going into Oklahoma. If West Virginia is looking to play a bowl game, they have some tough competition down the road. Austin Kendall and Kennedy McCoy need to have big games for them to succeed.
They'll be playing Mason Rudolph's alma mater, Oklahoma State, baby.
Yeah, they got some tough competition coming up. So West Virginia, Iowa State this weekend. West Virginia's 3-2. So that's that.
Should be an interesting weekend of college football. Now, as always, interesting. It's time for the irrelevant fact of the day.
Yeah!
Let's do it. All right, so this is an interesting one. We're going to go into a sport where we don't get to see much of unless it's college. Basketball. Okay. So, did you know? This is something that I don't think anybody knew.
This is why it is a irrelevant fact.
The referees in basketball, they toss a jump ball after every basket in basketball. Until 1937. Did you know that? After every basket.
Someone could technically get shut out if they had a big enough big man.
Instead of an inbounds pass, you just throw up a jump ball. Whoever wins the jump ball, you get possession again.
Whoever's more athletic or feels like getting up there, they can go get it, and then they can They could score all they wanted.
That's a lot of jump balls, man. That's crazy. So, you know, you talk about the length of games now. Everybody in every sport
complaining. Those games took multiple hours.
Those games had taken forever.
There was also no shot clocks. They could have held the ball they wanted until they got the shot they wanted.
They could have played Mount Lebo basketball in the Whitfield Championship, but that would not work.
That's another topic for another day.
That's another topic, but that is, as always, the irrelevant fact of the day. Thank you, thank you. Now we'll move on to the Pittsburgh Penguins, the only team that has been relevant in terms of winning championships over the last five seasons.
And we're also, there's been quite a bit of injuries. I mean,
they're another team that's been rattled.
It's been rattled. I mean, they lost Gino for a month, Bukestad for a month, I believe, also.
And Rust.
And then they sent Chucky. They sent Alex Galchenyuk on to IR, one of the new additions. I'm pretty sure he got sent on IR. And then I remember seeing something that he got put on IR. I mean, it's just a whole bunch of unfortunate injuries. So we've had to call up a bunch of our younger prospects to help us out. I mean, not much the Pens are going to be able to do with all these injuries. I mean, first couple games of the season, you lose your top two, you lose your second and third line centers. I mean.
Yeah, I don't think Galchenyuk did play against the Ducks last night.
I'm 90% sure they put him on IR.
They did put him on IR.
But yeah. The Penguins are 2-2. They came off a tough loss to Winnipeg. What was the final there? 4-1?
4-1, 5-1.
4-1. Crosby with the only goal there. And then Crosby started off the scoring last night
with a beautiful deflection.
Gensel also scored the other one.
And also Patrick Hornquist is also, he's day-to-day with a lower body injury. So, again, that's another guy that you're losing to injury here.
Gensel also got hit with the puck.
The Penguins have just hit the injury bug every other team in Pittsburgh sports, because you saw the Pirates through the whole season. Injuries left and right.
Yes, we played it with the Pirates. We will play it with the Penguins.
You know what we did?
Who are these guys?
You know what we did? We sold our soul for those back-to-back championships. We sold our souls.
We sold all of our team souls
to win those two championships, and now we're reaping the benefits. And also, I think they brought up a bunch of young prospects.
If there's any team to rebound after having so many injuries, it's the Penguins, because Mike Sullivan, I think, is one of probably the better coaches in town.
I 100% agree with that.
He's going to get his team rallied.
When we were looking at the Pirates roster later in September, we were saying, who are these guys? So with the Penguins roster, with everybody injured, let's also play, who are these guys? I'll just start throwing out some names that even I really have never really heard of, and you tell me if you know anything about them. Andrew Agazino, left winger. I don't even know if I pronounced his name right.
No, you pronounced his name right. I've heard his name a couple of times. I don't think he's a highly touted.
Name.
I don't think he's a highly touted prospect, but he's okay.
Recalled from the Wilkes-Barre Penguins a couple days ago. Name that I've heard of and not that familiar with, but he's been in the pipeline for a while. Sam Lafferty,
he's a good one.
He's a center. Maybe he can play a little bit.
I just looked up that they have him on the wing with Agazino at center, and then y'all get ready. Adam Johnson.
That's the next name I was going to bring up. Adam Johnson, number 47, then, listed as a center.
A guy that I'm hearing a lot of buzz about recently is John Marino. They brought him up on the defensive end.
A lot of people thought he was going to start on the roster this year, maybe make the roster over Rinkola and people like that.
What a shame. They didn't put Rinkola. What do you guys think of putting Rinkola on winger?
Yeah, I don't know if there's much offensive presence there. I think we did. Didn't the Penguins do it with Derek Englund before?
Yeah, but that's such a last resort type thing to go move Rinkola up to the wing. I mean, he's not getting playing time.
He's not getting playing time on the defense, back end. Why throw him? I mean,
it's not.
I mean,
a
he's
horrible...
more. He's more. He's more of an offensively minded player. Anyways, yeah. I mean, I don't. I could see it working out.
So, but for the Penguins, I think the one thing about these young guys coming up, not a lot of people
this could rejuvenate this team like it did in previous Cup runs. I mean, I'm not saying a Cup run's in store for us, but it could spark this team and force, and just they'll just play at a completely different level, because you have those big slow guys out of the game, and then you got these big fast guys.
In the past, we've seen here and there guys come up because of injury and play well, like Gensel and Cherry and all your other guys,
the Russ, those guys,
Kunackle, all sorts of different guys. But I think at this point in time, there's such a big flock of young guys that have to come up because of so many injuries, and just every game it seems like more and more.
Some of those dudes might not even be NHL ready. They're just throwing them out here.
Usually they bring up the guys that are more, not like extremely talented, but are more probably NHL ready than, you know, the guys that have the better stock
value.
That's
kind of why Sprong didn't really get a whole bunch of playing time, because other dudes
he wasn't developed yet. They held out on him because they expected him to develop into a big time player.
And he never did. I mean, do you know what he's doing over in Anaheim?
I believe they released him.
I believe so. He was on waivers.
They released him.
I don't think anybody even picked him up either.
But for the Pens, they're 2-2. I think there's a lot of building to do from this. I don't expect them for the month of October to be much of a great team. If they can stick around 500, that's a big plus. Maybe get a couple wins that maybe they shouldn't. But the one game I want to look at that we didn't touch on yet was last Saturday against the Blue Jackets. They won 7-2. The Blue Jackets aren't going to be a top team this year as they were last, but they're definitely
still a team to bike.
They're still a good team, overall, but the Penguins really just took it to them. And even when Malkin went down, I mean, we saw Brandon Tanev play with Jared McCann. Jared McCann took over center position on that line with Tanev and who else was on that second line? Cahoon. But McCann had two goals. Hornquist had two goals.
Do you want me to read the lines off like right now?
The one guy that I've liked watching so far. Brandon Tanev, the guy does a lot of the small things. He does them right.
I say I hate Tanev. I hate him for the money they got him for.
Yeah, but if he can do the small things.
If you could pay him like Dominic Cahoon money, like give him like maybe the minimum, maybe like 1.5 mil, I'd be okay with that for like a couple years. I would be okay with that. But they gave him 3.5 mil for 6 years.
Yeah.
That's money you pay your second line winger. That's the money you pay like a third line winger or a second line winger.
The length of the contract's pretty interesting.
And
the money
it's a no trade clause through most of it.
But if he does the little things right and he actually produces on the score sheet, that could be a big bonus for the Penguins this year. I liked what I saw from him. He was all over the ice. Last year, I believe he was third in the league in hits. He can throw the body, which I know, you know.
It comes in handy.
It energized the fans when he was throwing around the body at the game. I can tell you that. I mean, being at the game in person. So the Penguins 2-2 right now after a win versus the Jackets and then coming off last night versus the Ducks.
Also, how do you feel about the play of Matt Murray? I feel like it's been great.
Yeah,
I think he's slowly returning to form after two deep cup runs. He's finally got time to rest, and I actually think he's finally returning to form in what we saw whenever he made those deep cup
Murray
runs.
Murray played good last night versus an undefeated Ducks team, but the Jets have some good offensive threats, so yeah. not 100% surprised.
Fun fact, Lane is actually leading the league in points, I believe.
Yeah,
10 points.
People weren't expecting that, but there he is. Pens 2-2.
Pens coming off a 2-1 win over Anaheim. They will face Minnesota in their first road game Saturday night at 8. The lines as they were last night were Crosby, Gensel, Simone, McCann, Cahoon, Hornquist. Bluger ran with Ashton Reitz and Brandon Tanev. Agazino, Adam Johnson, and Sam Lafferty were on the fourth line. Don't worry about that. Dumoulin, Letang, Pedersen, Schultz, Jack Johnson ran with Marino in the lineup, and Matt Murray was in goal, backed up by Tristan Jarry. Those were the lines. That's how it went. Penguins get a good win. Now 2-2. A lot of season left. I don't think anybody really pays attention until after Christmas, but it's good to see the Penguins start to pick up a little bit more momentum. Just get some guys healthy, and everything should be fine. So now we move on to the segment that is maybe our favorite. I think a lot of us
segment. I don't know if you guys enjoy it, but we definitely enjoy it.
An original segment that we really enjoy. The
I'm sorry
segment. So who would like to go first with their I'm sorry?
I'll go first. I'd like to say I'm sorry to the Washington Nationals. I remember watching that game. The second it came, it became 3-1. I'm like, oh, this game's over. And then Kershaw comes in, and I was like, yeah, there's no way they win. And then next thing you know, I'm about to take a shower, and I look at my phone. It's a tie ball game at the top of the eighth. And I'm like, knowing Nationals fashion, I was talking to Austin about this. I was like, Nationals fashion, there's no way they win this game. Next thing you know, I look at my phone. Grand slam by Hallie Kendrick. 7-3 Nationals.
Game over.
Nationals, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm going to stick with the same game, but I'm going to go in the opposite direction. I'm going to be the LA Dodgers management team saying to my fans, oh, well, you.
I know I know you told us we should go out there and get a really good bullpen arm. Because remember, our bullpen always blows it late in the year. But hey, Kenley Jansen's here. Joe Kelly's coming back. We got about, oh, well, Joe Kelly gave up
a 23 ERA.
Gave up the grand slam, and you didn't trade for a key reliever.
Well,
like,
well, again, in all fairness, Felipe wouldn't be pitching in this series.
Yeah, but still, you didn't. You could have traded for Edwin Diaz. You could have got anyone else.
Ed Luz Diaz.
And, you know, Andrew Friedman, you didn't do it. So you should be telling your Dodgers fans for the third year in a row blowing postseason games by the bullpen, I'm sorry.
Congratulations, LA Dodgers.
You blew it.
Again. Right.
Oh, no, we suck again.
My I'm sorry goes from Pat Narduzzi out to the Pitt fans and his Pitt team for honestly not controlling their team in a game that they probably should have just ran away with, giving heart attacks to every Pitt fans that is trying to support them and not losing more fans than they already do for just being such a mediocre team over the past, you know, 20 years, trying to get their fans back. Narduzzi letting his team be so undisciplined, basically costing them the game. They were about to lose the game. Luckily, preventing all heart attacks, Kenny Pickett somehow manages to go down
Kenny,
the field.
Kenny Hyde's Valik Carter. Why is talking about this?
Touchdown. But, and also, another part, I sort of switched it from my original I'm sorry. My main I'm sorry was going to be about Paris Ford. Paris Ford got called for a targeting call that I don't know if it was targeting.
You think it was, think
probably,
it was iffy?
It was a defenseless receiver, so that's why.
I didn't see the play.
It was
so.
Defenseless receiver, so that's why. It was a similar hit. I mean, not on, well.
You're going to say Earl.
I was going to say Vontaze Burfict.
Oh, okay.
The shoulder hit the head of the receiver.
But, no,
but it
but
wasn't the crown of the, it wasn't the crown of the helmet, but it was defenseless receiver, so that's why I think they called him for it. Paris Ford had a great game up to until the muff putt and then getting targeted. So I'm sorry, Pitt fans, for giving you guys heart attacks and as Pat Narduzzi.
As every week, that is the I'm sorry segment. And now we'll move into the baseball part of the show with about 10 minutes left here on Baldwin and the Berg. Pirates continue to search for a new manager. Top candidates looking like Jeff Banister, Derek Shelton from Minnesota, as we've mentioned in the prior weeks. Those are two of the top guys, but as John Heyman reports, the job is still wide open, and no one really knows where the Pirates are going to go in this current climate with baseball playoffs ramping up. Really not much they can do until after the postseason ends
in terms of just Pennsylvania baseball in general. The Phillies have also released Gabe Kapler.
Yeah, Gabe Kapler,
middling Jimmy. Under 500 record.
What an interesting
of his duties.
What an interesting state of baseball right now. I was talking to Goldberg last night about the Phillies.
Goldberg.
Oh, it was a fun, fun discussion.
Should we get Goldberg on this show?
I think we need Goldberg on for an episode.
He could be our feature. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, Goldberg's team in Philadelphia, doing so good. But Goldberg's neighboring divisional team, the Atlanta Braves, they're doing pretty bad too.
They're doing just as great. Don't you worry. The massacre at SunTrust Park.
They are doing absolutely great.
The SunTrust massacre.
So we'll start there with the St. Louis Cardinals absolutely just destroying the Atlanta Braves.
Do you find it ironic that after Fulton Nevich pitched the game of his life, NLDS Game 2, that he goes out Game 5 and absolutely blows it?
It's just how baseball works. Baseball works like, in such mysterious ways where you can have an outstanding game and then the next game the hitting figures you out and you're getting blown out of the water.
No team has ever scored 10 runs in the first inning in a postseason game, ever. Cardinals first to do it.
Of course it's the Cardinals. Why wouldn't it be the Cardinals?
They score 10 in the first. They get another run in the second. End up with 13 total runs. Jack Flaherty pitched. Jack Flaherty pitched way too long. I would have only thrown him out there for one inning. You're already up 10-0.
Did you see the starters? What do you think of the rotations for both sides? Because I think I saw Michaelis pitches game one.
Yeah,
and then Wainwright game two, Flaherty game three, then Dakota Hudson.
I like Jack Flaherty on the road. I think he's the ace. I think he's got.
I like
composure.
And I like pitching Wainwright at home.
I really like Wainwright at home. I think he's the best there. I think he's the most comfortable there. I think we saw it in this series when he pitches at home and when he's confident.
He basically quieted the best
he
offense.
He was
one of the better offense.
Dominant. Now the game was blown by Carlos Martinez, but Wainwright was absolutely filthy.
Yeah, the score doesn't do it justice.
No,
Wainwright was disgusting.
He
both
was
him
incredible.
And Soroka.
8 strikeouts, only a couple walks. He was he was really good. He played really well. Pitched really well.
Wait, I didn't see who's pitching. Oh, Anibal Sanchez. He's going game one.
Anibal Sanchez will go for game one.
Yes, I saw that.
Against, as we mentioned earlier, the Nats beating the LA Dodgers.
Oh.
Nats, key hits, clutch hits.
Nate's pick still alive.
Anthony Rendon, Juan Soto, Howie Kendrick. Nate, you're still alive with your World Series picks.
Yeah, if you want to hear some more in-depth baseball coverage, you tune in to... If you want to hear some more in-depth baseball coverage, you tune into the Bryson Bechtel Baseball Breakdown Mondays at noon. One-hour coverage of baseball. But
12-1 on Mondays.
The Nationals are my sleeper team. I picked them to beat the Dodgers, and wow, did they surprise me even.
They were just throwing it out. He didn't even expect
it. I wanted the Nationals to win because, come on,
Everyone loves a good underdog in baseball.
Yeah, as a sports person, I like the underdogs. I don't like the teams that are always, constantly up there, the Patriots, the Dodgers, the Astros.
The Warriors.
NHL, it sort of rotates every so often. But the Dodgers, I was getting sick of them. I didn't want them. And honestly, if they went back to the World Series, were they going to win? Probably not. So,
no.
3 years
bullpen
in a row.
Would have blown it there.
Let's see a different team go back to the World Series. Hopefully.
But it's going to be another team. I'm saying it's going to be the third team from the AL to win the World Series. The AL, the Astros and Yankees, that's going to be the pretty solid ALCS.
It's going to be a dogfight.
All right, so let's move. So let's go over to the American League side of the bracket in the playoffs. Astros and the Yankees will meet in the ALCS. So how we got here, Yankees absolutely smacked the Minnesota Twins.
Not even a chance.
But again,
I'm
pretty sure I saw a stat that the Yankees have lost at least, I think. The Twins, they haven't beat the Yankees in five years.
The Twins have lost, I think, 14 or 15 playoff games in a row.
Yeah.
I think it's just to the Yankees in general. Or no, it might be a note.
No, the Twins don't have good success when it comes to playoffs. And also, every time they do go in the playoffs, they have a lot of young teams. So.
But again, this Twins team, I feel like they're just a hot and cold team. They did this 2 years ago, and then they fell off. And then, they've returned to form this year and then.
A lot of young players in the lineup.
A lot of great young players.
And a bunch of players, again, returning to form.
But when you face Goliath and the Yankees, I don't know if you're going to beat them. This series with the Astros and Yankees, wow, is it going to be a series? Both lineups just full of hitters. The Yankees, you got power hitters. The Astros, you got average hitters who get on base
and then
score
they got
with runners in scoring
position.
And then
people who can go have the ability to go yard. But again, they also have the upper hand in pitching.
Yeah, Astros in game five with Gerrit Cole versus Tyler Glasnow. A Pirates fans, hell, nightmare, worst dream.
Austin,
I don't know, whatever you want to call
with
it.
With Austin Meadows in their hitting leadoff.
Uh-huh, and Charlie Morton also in the mix in one way or another. Gerrit Cole absolutely shut down Tampa Bay. Dominant, filthy, whatever word you want to use to describe Gerrit Cole in a positive light.
You can do it.
It was that. So when I look at the playoffs so far, what I've noticed is, your bullpen can matter completely, but when I look at it and I look at the teams that are moved on, starting pitching, four teams have the best starting pitching in all of baseball. The Nats with Scherzer, Strasburg, Anibal Sanchez, Patrick Corbin. The Astros with Cole, Verlander, and Greinke, three aces right there. Cardinals, young guys of Flaherty, Dakota Hudson, the veteran Wainwright, throw in Miles Michaelis. And then the Yankees, Severino's back, James Paxton.
Tanaka.
Throw guys out there that have been there, done that.
And
it's
a reoccurring theme, and it ends up coming up after the two teams that are in the World Series normally have the best pitching.
Compared to the Twins rotation, the young and an inexperienced Tampa Bay rotation outside of Morton,
and then
Braves.
What is your opinion on the opener strategy? Because the Rays did it with Diego Castillo.
I think if the Rays can do it, then it should only be the Rays doing it, because I think their way of doing things is very unique, and I think it only works somewhat to them because they have a different philosophy that they really know what they're doing, and I think that it works for the Rays, but as we've seen with the Pirates earlier in the season, that doesn't mean you're going to get frequent results for all teams.
Yeah. The ALCS, I think, is going to be one of the best years. These two teams are going to really slug it out. I think the NLCS, two teams that weren't expected. Cardinals, we mentioned a lot, throughout our shows, that they were a team coming into August, still way outside the playoff picture. Looking,
what got them going? That great Pittsburgh pitching. They went on a tear ever since I remember being on vacation, and then the Cardinals absolutely ripped into us. Goldschmidt got his back going, and then after that, they just took off from there and ended up taking the division.
And then you have a Nationals team that, again, going into All-Star break, I mean, they were looking like a team that was going to sit at the bottom of the NL East, and yet they turned things around behind their starting pitching, their hitting, and two teams coming into this game, and the Nationals and Cardinals that weren't looking like to be there.
So that's where we'll start with our predictions as we wrap up. Who will go to? We're not going to say who's going to win yet. Who's going to go to the World Series from the National League and the American League? Who do you think is going to go?
Oh, boy.
National League, I'm sticking with the Nationals. I think the momentum that they got from beating the Dodgers is going to be none other. I think they're going to – they honestly, I'm going bold here. I'm saying they win the series in 5 games.
Ooh.
And then in the AL, you got to sort of stick with the Astros. Overall, there's no team like them maybe ever in baseball. They're one of the best, just one of the best all-around teams.
Okay, but I'm gonna oppose you on the NL side. I believe the Cards. I've been watching the Cardinals play. They've got some pretty hot bats right now, and they have pitchers who are just able to wipe you out. I mean again, the Nationals have okay hitting, but again, their bats remotely rely on Rendon, Soto, and again, they got one heroic bat out of Howie Kendrick. I mean, the Cardinals have a bunch of solid bats. They have Goldschmidt, Osuna, Colton Wong, a whole bunch of dudes.
Goldberg.
And a whole bunch of guys that are able to, and then they have pitchers who can wipe you out in Flaherty, Michaelis. And then on the AL side, I will also take the Astros. I think the Astros win in 6. I don't think the game goes to 7. The pitching would just wipe out those New York bats.
They don't have Goldberg on their side, but they do have Paul Goldschmidt. I also have
Paul Goldberg.
I also have the Astros. I had them winning the World Series. So I have them in my baseball show, so I also have them going. But I think I rode the Cardinals this far. I'm not going to ride them any farther. I think the Nats are going to win it. I think their rotation is just too good. I think Juan Soto and Anthony Rendon. Anthony Rendon's a lot better than I originally thought he was.
My MVP caliber player.
He's showing it in these playoffs why he is so good. So that's what I think. Will the Steelers bounce back versus the San Diego / LA Chargers?
Actually, I think they will. I like what I saw from Devlin Hodges. I mean, I think he looked capable of winning a football game. And again, that Chargers defense looks shoddy at best. And then, I don't know, I mean, same with the Chargers. I mean, the offense is still trying to implicate Melvin Gordon into their offense. So I think they're going to be able to do it. I think they're going to be able to pull off this win.
I 100% agree. I think Doc Hodges will show what he's had through his 3 years of college, starting for Samford, you know, breaking up all-time passing records and the FCS. I think, though, the factor in this game why the Steelers win, defensive turnovers. I think they have 2 picks against Philip Rivers. I say they return a pick, maybe on the likes of Minkah Fitzpatrick returning a pick 6 for the Steelers. I think they win by 3 points, though. I think it's going to be a close game like the Ravens. Steelers win this game.
I'm a little bit more worried than you guys seem to be. A little less confident.
You got to have some hope at some point in the season. They're 1-4. Yeah. You just got to sort of go for it.
You got to believe, man.
I think it's very possible. I think it's a 27-24 game.
I mean, no Derwin James on that defense. I mean, our O-line, hopefully if our O-line holds Ingram and Bosa, we can tear up that defense.
I'll throw the Steelers a bone because it's a primetime game, and I think 27-24 is the final score. Penguins-Minnesota, Saturday night, who wins? Penguins' first road game of the season.
First road game of the season, I have the Pens. I think they're going to continue to build. I think Sid has another monster game. He's shown that he has to step up and at this point in time with Russ, Bukestad, Malkin, all those guys out. Pens win, I think, 5-3, 2 goals from Crosby, 2 goals from McCann.
I think the Pens are going to win. I mean, with this team, I mean, you can never count this team out. With all the injuries they end up having throughout the season, I mean, they always end up pulling it out. I say they win by the score of 4-3 with a hat trick from Gensel and an empty netter from Sidney Crosby.
I go Pens 4-2. Minnesota goes to 0-4. Last prediction. We did this prediction last week. And
Austin's plans fall through.
Will Bechtel's plans fall through, part 2. They did not last week. Will they this week?
Execution's key. I think they don't this week.
Yeah, I believe perfection and execution is an ultimate factor when it comes to Bechtold's plans, and I personally believe that they will not fall through again. I think it's going to work out perfectly.
So you both think that my plans will not fall through for either Friday or Saturday?
Oh.
Well, let's stick with Friday real quick.
Okay, Friday. I think they will fall through.
You think they will fall through?
I think they will fall through.
Nate, do you think they will fall through?
But plans will not fall through Saturday. They will not fall through Saturday. They're going to fall through Monday. They're going to fall through Friday.
Actually, plans do fall through tonight due to curfews. And tomorrow, they don't fall through.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't think that Saturday really can fall through.
It's impossible.
But I said last week that I thought they'd fall through, but they didn't. So I'm going to say they're going to fall through again, and we'll see what happens. Now we'll move on to the shout-outs to close it out. Golbash, go take it away.
Grandma/Dama, I love you. I know you're watching in right now. I know you're tuning in. Awesome. I'll save those short remarks for you later, but I love you, Dama. Thank you so much for watching.
My shout outs, I do want to go collegiately to Paris Ford for a heck of a game. Hopefully that young man can get things going for Pitt. Whoa. And then shout out to mom and dad. They'll be listening to the show later. And shout out to people here, Josh Selzer and Sam Goldberg.
Goldberg! All right, I have my shout out.
Fun fact, Goldberg was actually walking through. We were able to say hi to Goldberg.
Yes, Goldberg was here. That's why we mentioned Goldberg. My shout out, I want to shout out Luke Achura, who's listening in right now. He's trying to go to class. He told me to shout him out earlier, but, you know, we have a special section for shout outs. I want to shout out my cousin Aaron, who is listening in again and critiquing what I'm doing. Hopefully I'm doing a good job for her. And I want to shout out the Duck, Devlin Hodges. Go out there on Sunday Night Football and get the Pittsburgh Steelers to win.
Wait, hold up. Actually, I have a sports one. I'm going to shout out James Conner because he made the Pro Bowl. And he's going to show you why he made the Pro Bowl.
Well, he better. Well, for another week, we had a good show today. Had a really fun show. Hope you have a good rest of your day. We hope ours is good, but we hope yours is even better. I'm Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I am Andrew Goldbash.
Thank you, as always, for listening. We'll see you next week. Baldwin and the Berg signing off.